the 15th in the year of our Lord 2013. And because it is a Thursday, we are going to be able to have with us another pastor so you can eavesdrop on our conversation. And we're going to be talking about church attendance. And with me this afternoon is none other than the Reverend Wes Reimnitz. Hi, Wes.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing very well. And yourself?
Doing pretty good. Still got that bum knee going for surgery the 29th of August.
You indicated, though, it was outpatient.
Oh, yeah, it'll be outpatient.
So what do? Just sit in the car and they work on it and then you just keep driving? Or
that would be fast, like fast food. But no, I have to go inside and they got to put me down for a couple hours.
Well, I'll tell you, I just was at a seminar and they were talking about the main topic that CEOs around the country are talking about is technology. It is changing so quickly.
Yes.
The Roman Catholic Church, it took them 2,000 years to reach a billion members, and Facebook did it in less than 8 months.
Oh, my.
Isn't that something? There are over a billion members now on Facebook, which is one out of seven people on Earth look at Facebook.
You know, and you had that topic on yesterday about, what was it, TIG or...
Yes.
That was good. I listened to that, you know, and I went away with a couple things I knew I'm going to need to do in my parish.
Well, I already have changed my videos, some of my PowerPoints, to fit into what he was saying, but it is a totally different way of looking at things. And you know what the word was they used today? Was disruption, that companies are going to be totally disrupted. And they gave a good example. I don't know if you've ever rented a car at the airport, but you go and you stand in line, and then maybe after 45 minutes, you got a car and you drive away and all this. Well, a new company, by using the new technology, here's what you do. They give you an app, so they know who you are. And as you come out of the airport, you just indicate you're coming to get a car and what kind you want. And you walk, you don't even go into line. You just walk to the car and you click your iPhone and the door opens. The keys are in it. And when you come back, it's the same thing. You drop off the car, click your iPhone, the door locks, and you walk away. You don't see anybody.
But you brought up the word disruption.
Yes. Well, all the other ones like Hertz, et cetera, Avis, this is really disrupting their bottom line.
You know, from a biblical perspective, if you look at Luke 10, Mary and Martha, it was distractions.
Yes. Yeah, distractions can do it. But what's happening is the smart companies. For example, in Chicago right now, you want a taxi? Sometimes you got to wait a while, etc. No, they have a company. They give you an app, same kind of thing. And you go to the app and you hit it and it tells which of their cars are nearest to you that are available. And it even gives you a star number as to which is the best driver. And you click the one you want and within 4 minutes, they're picking you up. And there's and the taxi cab drivers are really getting angry at this because it's taking away a lot of their fares.
Well, no, there's so much you can do with technology, but you know, I'm preparing with my confirmation class. We start here in a couple of weeks, and one of the things I know, based upon listening to your program yesterday, is to have a half hour or a lesson on internet use.
Yes.
You know, what are the pros and the cons, and what are we as Christians when we get involved in that kind of use? I thought that was so good yesterday.
Well, that kind of leads us into our subject for today, and that is the plummeting church attendances that you're seeing far and near. I know you have some information in front of you. Go with what you think is the best, like the reasons for plummeting church attendance or anything along that line, Wes.
Well, you know, I read, I sent you several articles that I took a look at.
Yes.
One was seven startling facts, a closer look at church attendance in America. And they were saying the numbers aren't really the numbers, so to speak, that less than 20% of America is attending a church. And I definitely would agree with that. I think it's a little higher percentage. I think we're right around 26% in the Missouri Senate on a per church basis. But, you know, those are not what you call big numbers to scream at. When I was over in Indiana, it was between 48 and 50% is what we had on a Sunday morning back in the 1980s and early 1990s.
To some degree, you do have individuals like policemen, nurses, folks on vacation, folks who are ill who aren't coming to church. That doesn't really bother me too much.
No, I think you're on target with that. You do have professional people. You also have retired people that are out of town visiting grandchildren, or they're at their vacation home, or people are on vacation and things like that. I think you have to take those kind of things into consideration. But, you know, they brought up several things about, you know, actual versus who's the member of the church. I call it the actual and the bloated membership. You know, we did a study years ago in our Central Illinois district. We came to the conclusion that when you took all the churches in CID in Central Illinois, and that included not just only the Lutherans, but the Catholics, the Reformed churches and things like that, added up their memberships, and then took a look at the population, and then you started taking a look at a percentage of your churches being delinquent. You know, in other words, they claim membership, but they don't come. We were at 50% on church.
Now, what are your reasons you think that people who are members of a congregation don't attend consistently?
Well, the article gave quite a few different ones, but if you're asking for my reasons, I think they get distracted. You know, I come back to that Mary and Martha story.
Yeah.
I think it's so intriguing. Martha was busy, as it was, really doing a good deed. She was preparing, making preparations for the dinner, the supper, whatever it was that she had Jesus and his disciples and others over for. But quite clearly in Luke, it puts down that it's distracted. We are so distracted with so many things. One of the articles I sent you was on sports. You know, how
has that really become a problem? Where sports, I think in the article it was mentioning the gentleman had gone to a church for Easter, and a number of the people were gone because the team was playing both Good Friday, Saturday, and Easter Sunday.
Yes, that is a problem. Not a problem for us up in Havana, but. You know, as you know, I do confirmation on Sunday after my second service when the confirmation year comes up.
Yes.
It's, and all the parents, I'm getting ready to start it up again, and the parents said, it's great, we've got Sunday where it's just church.
Yes.
Sunday school, worship, confirmation.
And the few times I've been there, they even bring a little meal for the kids.
Oh, yes. And that turned out to be a great thing.
Yes.
Because I sit, have a short meal with the kids, and I ask them how their week's been, what's coming up, what's going on in their life, and we're able to relate with one another, and then we launch into the lesson for the day.
And you're able to make application appropriate then. Yes, there's no doubt in this day and age of broken families, depending on what kind of congregation you're in. I was somewhat inner-city congregation, and there were a number of parents who were sole parents. Either the mother was missing or the father was missing, and that's really difficult to keep the kids in check as well as make sure they get to church and Sunday school.
Yes, I have a couple blended families in this instance, but God love them, boy. They're very committed that the child's going to receive the confirmation instruction. And they're going to lengths because of the custody agreements to make sure that the child's there on Sunday morning to listen to it. So, you know, it's, when it comes to the distractions of that, of the blended family, you know, they look at that one thing that is needful, which is the child receiving that word and that instruction in the faith as their next juncture. And that's kind of what I see with this church attendance. The more I looked at it, and you and I had talked about this, you know, over the phone a couple nights ago, and you hit on a particular point that I thought was good, and that was relationship building. And you had talked about it, how you had done it in your church through Bible study. You remember that?
Yes, yeah. The worship service isn't where you really build relationships. And then I went near the end of my ministry there, I got the idea of taking kids out to eat at McDonald's, you know, without their parents. You know, have three or four of them come along, and that really got a way in which you were building a relationship. They were able to talk to the pastor. He wasn't somebody far away. But in light of yesterday's broadcast and some of your thinking, what are any ways you think that church attendance could be improved by those who are listening right now in congregations or pastors?
That pastors can build on building relationships?
Some techniques that might be helpful in building greater attendance.
I saw the key point was I really went off of what we had talked about, relationship building. How do you build those trust factors between them?
Yes.
And, of course, I had sent you that document that you put online about every member visitation. That's one in which you can get members talking with members, and it covers two fronts. It covers the ones that are already coming, which you continue to build that trust in the church. It also reaches up to the ones that aren't coming, so that it builds in that relationship. Another thing that...
Before we go on with that, let me just talk about that. In the old days, either you were on the telephone and both of you knew each other, you had seen each other, so there already was that, or you meet somebody on the street and you're looking face to face. But in this day of age of Twitter and Facebook, etc., you don't see people's faces. So I recently did a video, and I didn't have myself in it. My voice was in it, but not any picture. And I was told by just about everybody, you really need to have your face shown, because that just increases the trust level when they actually see somebody. And I think it was yesterday he talked about, or an article I read, that if you're there with part of your family, it even increases the trust level even more for some reason.
Exactly. You know, and when he talked about that, when I first got over to Havana and I started preaching, you know, on a regular basis, the people were actually tweeting and texting one another and saying, hey, you better come to church today, you know, because we had the two services on Sunday, 7:45 and 10:15. You better come to 10:15. You're going to like this one. They would actually take the time out to talk to one another, you know, via texting and Twittering.
Well, I think that really deals more, though, with content than just the visual of seeing you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And see, that's where I come down hard. A lot of these CEOs, they're dealing with business models. Well, the church isn't a business model, but what I see in talking about technology, I don't think technology will help at all in persuading anybody about the truth of Jesus Christ.
That I would agree.
What it does do, though, it keeps their attention.
Right.
It's kind of like, there's a comedy on the radio all the time, and he's a funny guy, and he went into a church, and he was trying to listen, but you could hear the pastor, but you couldn't make any sense out of the words. Like he was speaking softly, and then the Lord, stuff like that. And he started looking around the ceiling. He even fell asleep in the pew. But a good preacher will use a captivating voice and have some irony and some alliteration to keep people interested in the message. I mean, there's some people that you'd be interested even if they were reading the white pages of a telephone book because of how they use their voice and such. So I'm not opposed at all to making the sermon more hearable. It's just that none of those techniques will make it more believable, but it will never become believable if people aren't listening.
If people aren't listening. And there, I call it the two tens. The first ten was Luke 10 that we took a look at.
Yeah.
And the other one would be Romans chapter 10.
Well, yeah, faith comes by hearing what? The Word of God.
The Word of God. And if they're not listening, they're not going to hear.
Fact that you have, a lot of people in your congregation, I'll bet you a number of them have a Twitter or a Facebook account. Have you given any thought about using that in maybe a weekly message from the pastor or a heads up about what the sermon's going to be like or something along that line?
Right. We're looking into those possibilities, those that we can text about the message.
Yes.
But also, we're still at a point, a lot of, in some areas, people have moved on from email, but we're still at a juncture up there that we can email. We're looking at emailing newsletters or emailing a 4 or 5 paragraph or a 3 or 4 paragraph message, because as it was pointed out, you just can't go into long, lengthy messages.
St. Paul Lutheran Church, every Thursday, we get a weekly newsletter in the email for those of us who have it. And it has about 8 articles in it about the Bible studies coming up this Sunday, special events, how you get your child enrolled, and then they'll always have some other tidbits that you can go even to other parts of the computer to keep reading about. We never had that in my day, simply because very few of our people had computers, or certainly very few had email.
Oh, yeah. When I was out in Indiana, I was one of the few, the only one in the parish that had a computer in the house. And they thought I was all crazy.
Yeah. The gentleman today at our seminar made the point, I haven't heard this yet because I haven't looked at the news, and I don't go to Twitter, but he said that yesterday during a practice or a game, some football player got injured who was a real good football player. Have you heard about that?
No.
Okay. Well, anyway, he said, within 5 minutes, Twitter was filled with the news. Mm. And he was making the point that's how people get a lot of their information. Twitter, if you want to know what current events are like, you go to Twitter.
Right.
If you want to know more about a story, you go to Facebook.
You remember the airplane that went in the river there? I think.
Yes.
There was a guy that had Twittered a picture of it. He was on a ferry, and within 5 minutes, they figured it was all over the world.
Yeah.
And it hadn't even broken on national news, but it was all over Twitter.
Yeah. So that's something the church needs to look at. You made a suggestion when we were talking on the phone that you ought not only get the addresses and phone numbers of your members, but also anyone who has an email.
Email, yeah. That's one thing we do in our church. We've got them all. We keep asking for the emails or updates on the emails, and that way we can contact them. The other thing we're still looking at is, like you say, emailing out the newsletter. I like that idea that you brought up before, having a weekly newsletter going out to them, describing things that are going on.
A friend of mine went to a congregation in the Chicago area, and there were 1,100 people on the rolls, but they also had a figure in those days how many communed once during the year, and it was only about 120. Now, those 900 delinquents that had never communed once during the year, I'll bet you that if you did a survey of them, they hadn't had anybody from that congregation visit them for years.
Yeah. One of the other things we're looking at is upgrading our sound booth, because, as you know, we're on the radio on Sunday morning over our local station, 99.3 FM. And we are looking at going more digital in terms of our sermons and eventually videoing our worship services, and then putting them online on the computer, because I know many churches where people across the country will come and listen to the sermons in that church.
Yeah. Getting back to the point I had started, though, about that these people had never been visited, the point I want to make then is you need to get their email addresses and start sending them some weekly note.
Right.
Now, would it be law or gospel?
Yeah, I think it's going to be law because they know they're not coming.
Okay. You're not going to be wrong in that, but here's how I would do it. The note would tell them something exciting about, say, what the sermon is going to say. And the way you do that is you ask a question that they're probably asking, and the sermon's going to give that answer. Now, when they get the email, it will be law because they know you're sending it to them because they're not showing up. But the content is going to be very inviting, and there's not going to be really any kind of discipline in it or this sort of thing. And a lot of people think that, boy, if I haven't gone to church for a number of months, I guess I don't deserve to go there. And I think by these little emails, we can even alert the people more. And if you can't do email, then I would definitely, you know, spend the money for a postage stamp with a little letter about once a month.
I would agree. You know, it all comes back to contact and trying to build some type of relationship with the person that's not coming or people in your community.
Yes, because if that relationship isn't built up, another way we did that, we would make a point around Thanksgiving to stop at delinquents' homes to see if they had sufficient food. I had a member of my congregation, about 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, he asked me, how many turkeys do you need? And then I would have done the work ahead of time as to how many people really needed food. And I would tell him that, sometimes 12, sometimes 8, sometimes more. And believe it or not, he would have those frozen turkeys at the church the week of Thanksgiving, and we would start taking them out to people. And that did bring back some people because they just felt that they were unwelcome because nobody had called upon them.
Now, what we do, and we're just finishing up this week, we spent about 3 or 4 weeks food collection for our food pantry. We do ours right around the first of the year and right now in July and August, because that's when there's a critical factor, like 60% of the local food pantry is empty. And we have over 100 in our school district that are being serviced by that, and it just decimates it. Because everybody's on vacation and things like that, they forget about it. All the churches collect. We fill the food pantry in August and get it back rolling again. And it's just tremendous. We practically doubled this year in finances and what people gave for food to help out in the community. It's just tremendous.
Well, you know, I have that store, Bargains New and Resale, and the thing that goes faster than anything is used clothes. Mm-hmm. And so people, I only sell it for $2 for a shirt, $3 for a suit or dress. And in fact, recently I've been there at 9:30 every Saturday morning, and by 9:40 people are coming in. They kind of wait for me to open up, and then they. I'm also fortunate; I have a laundromat in that strip of shops, and so while people are waiting for their clothes to be dried or whatever, they're always kind of moving over to see what's going on.
Wow.
Any final thoughts then on attendance and? Do you think people are really becoming more and more less intrigued with religion, or is it these distractions, you think?
I think it's distractions. You know, the key to it is, and I think the road that I'm going to take is that just what we had been talking about, not only on this program, but several days before, is that we really need to build these relationships, whether it's through emails, through texting, or just getting out there visiting, or build a program to meet the pastor, or have a ever member visitation, somehow that we're out there connecting and we're sharing that message of the good news of Jesus Christ with those individuals, let them know that we love them and care about them.
And, you know, like your vacation Bible school, you would get the kids who weren't members of the church to bring in other children who weren't members of the church during the week. Didn't you try that?
Oh, yes. In fact, the class that I taught, we within 3 days, we had doubled the class size where I had. And it was all just invite them. It's good time, and you know that you're loved and cared about.
I think your radio ministry really makes a difference because you probably have a lot of people that aren't even Lutheran listening to that radio program.
Yes, just like you have mentioned, you get people stop you on the street and say, I know you. They do the same. They say, I listen to you. And
okay, your services on Sunday?
7:45 and 10:15 with 9 o'clock Bible class.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Wes, for being with me today. Appreciate that. I'm Tom Baker. Tomorrow is going to be Open Mic Friday. We're going to look at a hymn. And also, David asks, if I'm judged at death, is that a second judgment on Judgment Day? We're going to discuss that also. Till tomorrow, then, I'm Tom Baker. God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105, or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.